Morning. Okay. So have you noticed we're singing all these songs today about I am enough, I have God within, I'm really doing pretty well? Because I thought this week in particular might trigger the thoughts we all have about not being as good as other people. Now, see, I'm comparing myself to Sherry Stockman, who just did that beautiful prayer about love, which is what you're supposed to do on Valentine's Day. What it brought up for me was that inner critic. So Friday night, Valentine's night, I'm at home watching the Olympics by myself. And really only once or twice I heard that little voice that said, everyone else in the world is out to dinner with the love of their life. Now, I am old enough to know that's not true. A lot of people are happily alone on Valentine's, and some are with people they wish they weren't. But that little voice is still there comparing me. Then there's the Olympics. It is a festival of comparing people to each other. Rate them, rank them, time them. Talk about how much faster one skier is than another because he got a mile down the mountain 1 second faster than the other one. A full second is an eternity at the Olympics. Did you see the girl in the skeleton who didn't get a medal by 4/100ths of a second? If you step back even a little, you can see that these athletes are all equally good. If they can perform amazing physical feats within seconds of each other, they're all great. But you know, even the silver and bronze winners will lie in bed at night thinking about what they could have done differently. Then, this coming Saturday, we have our congregational workshop called Deep Engagement. We will talk again about our different strengths and how to blend them together in creating this great church. This has been a series of strengths workshops. They've all been fun. It's fun to find out what someone else's top strengths are, as well as your own. And it's another opportunity to hear that voice of comparison. Mine says, those people are achievers and maximizers, and all I do is think. It says, that person wins others over and seeks harmony in relationships, and I don't have any people skills in my top strengths. Does anyone else do that? You're laughing at me, aren't you? Okay. I think we all occasionally see someone who seems stronger, prettier, a better provider, a better grandparent, has better ideas, throws better parties, and we compare whatever's important to us at the time, which changes over a lifetime. I remember my mother used to compare her housekeeping to other women. And we would visit someone's house, and she would say on the way home, her house is so clean, you could just eat off her floors. Now, this was in the 1950s, when television warned you about yellow wax buildup. When is the last time you waxed a floor? But advertising reinforces our inadequacy. It has to pinpoint a problem in order to sell you a solution. Society in general has endless ways to compare people and rank people. Who's the best dressed on the red carpet? Who's going to the Super Bowl? In the military, they actually wear their rank on their uniform, so you will know immediately how important they are, how they measure up. The church has always had hierarchy, too, until recently. The Pope wore the fanciest clothes. So most of us grew up being taught to compete. Spelling bees, math contests, sports of all kinds. For me, they didn't have to manufacture competition. All I had to do was look around and compare myself to the other kids. That's why kids tease each other. It's why they bully. It's all about comparison and differences and how we feel about ourselves inside. Now, in fairness, we are driven by our DNA. Sizing up the competition has been part of our survival. Women needed to attract a good man or they and their children would starve. Men needed to get women to propagate the species. They needed to be strong to win in battle and go out hunting. So we still check out how strong or attractive the others are. Our brains just naturally go there. And then they make one of two judgments. That person is so much better than me. Or, that person isn't as good as me. Both those judgments come from ego. Both are fear-based. Thinking you're better than others is a desperate attempt to reassure yourself you're okay. Thinking you're better or worse, both come from the fear you're not enough. The sad thing is, either way you go, that judgment of self and others blocks relationship, partnership, collaboration, and intimacy. There's a wonderful book called The Untethered Soul. It's about living from divine consciousness. But Michael Singer writes about this yammering voice that tells us we're not good enough. And he compares it to living with a crazy roommate. If you had a roommate who sat next to you all the time or followed you around saying, "You're not good enough. You shouldn't have said that. You look awful today." Those people are smarter, handsomer, stronger, just better equipped for life than you. You would kick that roommate out. Or at least tune that roommate out. You wouldn't take it seriously. And that's what we can do with the critical voice. Just because you have a thought doesn't make it true. You don't have to believe all your own thoughts. More significant, the very fact that you can identify the judgmental voice means it isn't really you. Who is it that notices the voice? Who is it that's wiser than the voice? That's the real you. Call it the witness, the divine within, the higher self. It knows a greater truth. And it will tell you the truth. Your inner wisdom can steer you in a different direction with love. You just have to be still enough to hear it and then believe it. I think a lot of us are afraid if we don't let the crazy roommate rant, we'll never improve ourselves. Got to be vigilant to spot my flaws. Really? Does it motivate you to do better if someone is criticizing every move you make? Inner wisdom guides and supports. It doesn't scold. Now, it might tell a difficult truth like, "You know, it's time to leave this relationship." Or, "This job is making you physically sick." But you'll feel the love in the message. It's coming from the divine in you. We can do that with each other, too. Tell the truth in love. And you know who did that well? Nancy Keefe, whose service is later today. So here's my Nancy story. I went to see her in the hospital just a few weeks ago, and I thought it might be the last time I saw her. So I made a point of saying how much I've loved having her in the church, how supported I felt by her. And she said, "Well, thank you, but I'm still going to speak my mind." So I imagine she's on the other side today, speaking her mind. But I thought later about the time she spoke her mind to me or in classes or groups. I never felt criticized or judged. She was clear about her truth, and she communicated that without making someone else wrong. I don't know if she was always that way or if she just learned it over nearly 9 decades. We're all evolving consciously now. We can identify the survival instincts that no longer serve us. Competition, suspicion, the need for power, the need to feel better than. The work of our human lives is to recognize the divine in us and call it forth. To live from a higher level of awareness than we did in the cave. To see the divine in ourselves and others, and to see us all as one. Which brings us to philosopher Theodore Geisel, Dr. Seuss. Now, all right, this is a story called The Sneetches, first published in 1961. Now, the Starbelly Sneetches had bellies with stars, The plain belly sneeches had none upon thars. Those stars weren't so big. They were really so small, you might think such a thing wouldn't matter at all. But because they had stars, all the star belly sneeches would brag. We're the best kind of sneech on the beaches. With their snoots in the air, they would sniff and they'd snort. We'll have nothing to do with the plain belly sort. And whenever they met some, when they were out walking, they'd hike right on past them without even talking. When the star belly children went out to play ball, could a plain belly get in the game? Not at all. You only could play if your bellies had stars, and the plain belly children had none upon theirs. When the star belly sneeches had frankfurter roasts or picnics or parties or marshmallow toasts, they never invited the plain belly sneeches. They left them out cold in the dark of the beaches. They kept them away, never let them come near. And that's how they treated them year after year. Then one day, it seems, while the plain belly sneeches were moping and doping alone on the beaches, just sitting there wishing their bellies had stars, a stranger zipped up in the strangest of cars. "My friends," he announced in a voice clear and keen, "my name is Sylvester McMonkey McBean, and I've heard of your troubles, I've heard you're unhappy, but I can fix that. I'm the fix-it-up chappie. I've come here to help you. I have what you need, and my prices are low, and I work at great speed, and my work is 100% guaranteed." Then quickly, Sylvester McMonkey McBean put together a very peculiar machine, and he said, "You want stars like a star belly sneech? My friends, you can have them for $3 each. Just pay me your money and hop right aboard." So they clambered inside. Then the big machine roared, and it clonked and it bonked, and it jerked and it burked and it bopped them about. But the thing really worked. When the plain belly sneeches popped out, they had stars. They actually did. They had stars upon theirs. Then they yelled at the ones who had stars at the start, "We're exactly like you. You can't tell us apart. We're all just the same now, you snooty old smarties. And now we can go to your frankfurter parties." "Good grief," groaned the ones who had stars at the first. "We're still the best sneeches, and they are the worst. But now how in the world will we know," they all frowned, "if which kind is what or the other way around?" Then up came McBean with a very sly wink, and he said, "Things are not quite as bad as you think. So you don't know who's who, that is perfectly true. But come with me, friends. Do you know what I'll do? I'll make you again the best sneeches on beaches, and all it will cost you is $10 eaches." "Belly stars are no longer in style," said McBean. "What you need is a trip through my star-off machine. This wondrous contraption will take off your stars, so you won't look like sneeches who have them on theirs." And that handy machine, working very precisely, removed all the stars from their tummies quite nicely. Then with snoots in the air, they paraded about. And they opened their beaks and they let out a shout, "We know who is who. Now there isn't a doubt. The best kind of sneeches are sneeches without." Then, of course, those with stars all got frightfully mad. To be wearing a star now was frightfully bad. Then, of course, old Sylvester McMonkey McBean invited them into his star-off machine. Then, of course, from then on, as you probably guess, things really got into a horrible mess. All the rest of that day, on those wild, screaming beaches, the fix-it-up chappie kept fixing up sneeches. Off again, on again, in again, out again. Through the machines, they raced round and about again, changing their stars every minute or two. They kept paying money. They kept running through until neither the plane nor the star bellies knew whether this one was that one, or that one was this one, or which one was what one, or what one was who. Ha 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 ha! Then, when every last cent of their money was spent, the fix-it-up chappie packed up, and he went. And he laughed as he drove in his car up the beach. They never will learn. No, you can't teach a sneech. But MacBean was quite wrong, I'm quite happy to say, that the sneeches got really quite smart on that day. The day they decided that sneeches are sneeches, and no kind of sneech is the best on the beaches. That day, all the sneeches forgot about stars, and whether they had one or not upon theirs. So you see how they're a lot like us. They start out with a mass consciousness of comparison. And I love it that it's just a star. The story doesn't specify whether the star means they're smarter or prettier or richer. It's just a star. But it matters in their society. So along comes the fix-it-up chappie. Maybe he's the inner voice. Maybe he's a TV commercial. But he's reinforcing your fear that you don't measure up. You need some work. And that's when the sneeches part with their money to meet their society standards, to conform. I've thought of all the money we spend on plastic surgery or hair and nails or even spiritual workshops. We all have something about ourselves we worry isn't good enough, and a lot of us pay to fix it. I first thought MacBean was unloving and unhelpful because he double-crossed all the sneeches to get their money, to pay for improvements. But I wonder now if he isn't the divine teacher, even accidentally. By the time he left town, the sneeches knew their oneness. They learned an old spiritual teaching, the divine equality of all beings. In Lessons in Truth, one of Unity's earliest books, Emily Cady talked about that. She said, "I want to stimulate you to lose sight of all differences, all side issues and lesser things, and seek one thing. That is the consciousness of the presence of an indwelling God in you and your life. And believe me, just as there is less separation between the spokes of a wheel the nearer they get to the hub, so you will find that the nearer you come to the perfect center, which is the Father, the less difference there will be between you." It seems to me most of the problems in the world stem from differences, from not understanding or appreciating our differences. Every fight between a couple about money or how to raise the children is just based on different views. Jealousy, criticism, fear, ratchet that, all the way up to war, are all because we have different ways of seeing the world, different things we think are important. And it can seem like humans are just trapped in a life of power struggles, while a voice inside tells us that we're losing. But the more we live consciously in the field of the divine, the more we live and move and have our being within spirit, the less those differences matter. Personality can be put in service to the soul. Differences can blend instead of clash. What we all share is a divine home and this temporary human journey on earth. So who has a date on Valentine's Day? Who wins the Olympics? Who has a star on their belly? Who doesn't? Is all just detail. What matters is the Christ in you, your hope of glory. So let's take all of this into meditation with Kit.
Take a deep breath in and let it out. Get your feet flat on the floor, and if you have anything in your lap, just set it aside. Take those deep cleansing breaths. Center yourself. And be begin to take yourself into that place of quiet and centeredness. Opening. Opening your heart. Opening your mind. And bringing your attention to the idea that if you are present in this room right now, right here today, there is something that you have in common with everyone else, beginning with your heart. The physical organ of the heart that beats in your chest. If you are here, you have one. And if you are here, you have a brain. A magnificent machine. That holds every single thought, every experience, every electrical impulse that has kept you alive, that brought you here in the first place. That you also have in common. Most important thing that you have in common with everyone in this room and on this planet and beyond is that spark of divinity. Difference between you and that person next to you is how you express that. So for a moment, think about it. Essence of that spark in you. thinks that you are the you, and there is no one newer than you. And how cool is that? So take another deep breath. Let it out. And in that gratitude, join me in a very big hallelujah. Hallelujah.